is to blame, but it's only paid yourself. Put the blame on everything. Money is to blame, but it's only paid yourself. Put the blame on everything. The more you try, the more you lose. The more you lose, the less you have. They say that money makes you change. What a funny thing to say. Only thing money gives is a choice. You wanna make so no one ever found joy from paper by yourself. It's the choices that you make, what you do. They say that money is to blame, but it's only paper. Self put the blame on everything. Money is to blame, but it's only paper. Self put the blame on everything. The more you try, the more you lose. The more you lose, the less you have. The more you try, the more you lose.
Out of L.A., that's Ozo Matli, a six-member band of vocal activists who came together in 1995. This song, It's Only Paper, is from their 2010 album, Fire Away. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead. Well, Trump world is here. And even though it's relatively new, it certainly isn't pretty. The president-elect is shaping up his cabinet, selecting as nominees careerists, mostly of a military, national security, law enforcement, ultra-conservative, super-Christian, racist bent, most of them stodgy white men who, like their patron, yearn to implement policies that will make America great again. Yes. That refrain was and is dog whistle talk from Donald Trump, signaling to his base of support that their objectives are also his. Their objects of rage and derision also will be his. He will be, his term will be a term settling scores for them. Trump's withering promises and threats are coming closer to reality, and there appears to be little or no political defense for the masses of people who voted against him, or more appropriately, not for him and his policies, whether through the Democratic Party or independent third parties. So is this confirmation that Trump's triumph indeed has been total? Why do I ask the question? Because it goes back to the original question, what the heck do we have as a defense, as a political defense? Okay, we had the election, and of course we know people voted for Trump. He did not win the popular vote, but he won the electoral vote, and there are people still threatening to derail his presidency in confronting the formal and official Electoral College vote. And I don't know that that's going to go anywhere, but you know, in the world of politics, people make all kinds of moves to get people excited about things. But I'm pointing out the original question. In this election, what's Plan B? Who has it? Other than the oligarchy, who has Plan B? In fact, I think nobody has a Plan B. And that goes for the third parties or the so-called splinter groups. We have no defenses. And that's where I urge us to start. How did we end up with no defenses? Well, clearly, the expectation on the part of the Democrats was they would win. Hillary will prevail because actually, you know, it's hers to claim. She is long overdue a coronation, and this was supposed to be the election year that it would happen. So it appears they were so confident, overconfident, in fact, that there isn't a plan B. The Democrats have no plan B. The Republicans, who were beginning to develop a sense of confidence late in the game, though, but they won, so they don't need a plan B. And they are dedicated, as we can see from the initial formation of Trump's cabinet, they have a plan. It's a very military plan. And they are going to proceed with it. Now, they may start up with it. They may not end with it. It may be a little bit premature to talk about their plan of action for the next 4 years. Hopefully, they last that long, because we see so many contradictions arising in Trump himself, his children, and even members of the cabinet that he intends to nominate. It's just rife with conflicts of interest and other problems. So his term in office, excuse me, may well be terminated prematurely by some kind of major discovery of major conflicts of interest, and or shooting himself in the foot. We'll see. We'll see. I'm not so much concerned about that, because they are operating with a system. And it is to the system that they owe the first allegiance, not the people. It's to the system. That system which assures them continuity, it assures them all kinds of goodies. So people pledge allegiance first to the system that brought them to power and that hopefully, in their view, will sustain them for a long time in office. Look at what Barack Obama is doing now. As he makes his exit, he's trying as gracefully as possible to protect his so-called legacy. I don't know what legacy he's talking about. He appears to have in mind that he has a legacy. What is important is to note his behavior. And here, the soon-to-be former president is making an extraordinary effort to be statesmanlike. As he makes his final rounds, if you notice, to all these other countries that he was developing relationships with and redeveloping relationships with. I have a different view of that. I think part of all of this, this ceremonial closing out of business, also has to do with him being gracious, so that they will remember his graciousness when he becomes a private citizen and needs the business contacts and so forth that he opened the door to as president. So it's the Clinton model with a little bit of dilution. It's not full force Clinton. It is a less vibrant brand of Clinton diplomacy. But it is meant to signal to these countries that he's been working with in the last 8 years, developing all these different trade agreements and doing diplomatic work. John Kerry, the Secretary of State, also flacking for him to communicate to these nations that the United States has a particular picture of what global cooperation is, the issues that dominate, so that the entire world is going to benefit if there's cooperation, this kind of stuff. So this is what Barack Obama is doing now. He's trying to exit gracefully, and in exiting gracefully, he ain't about to raise anybody's hackles. He's not about to cut his nose to spite his face. The Clintons, as we know, through the Clinton Foundation, have been enjoying running a shadow government for the past 8 years under Barack Obama's very nose and seemingly with his cooperation. They've been doing their own thing. Hillary Clinton is Secretary of State and former senator and co-president with Bill when he was elected to 2 terms. They're taking care of business. This is the era of the entrepreneurial president. It's money. But Donald Trump has taken this to an unprecedented level. He comes into office with serious money. He comes into office with major ties in about 18 different countries where he's doing business, big business. And he now has a cudgel that is unmatched in the world. He's president of the United States. And he has distinguished himself among the oligarchy. Not only does he have money, he has nuclear power. He has an army. He has a navy and an air force. He has the Secret Service. He's got the intelligence community. He's got everything. He is the number one oligarch of the world. His private business interests are going to explode with success because he's got a foot in both worlds, firmly planted. And he's got the prize. The prize isn't just the White House. The prize is the military force that will back it up. It's a new way of doing business. You either do it my way or you do it my way. That's the new era of politics that we're in. It's not so new when you really think about it. What is new is the level and intensity of the power that being president of the United States or of any major country, you now leverage your private or your corporate assets, and you can do so with the aid of the military. So it is not surprising, therefore, that the people presented so far by Donald Trump are military types. Because, yes, people, fascism is coming to a community near you. And the people will be made to be glad about it. The conflicts of interest are so evident with Trump, they almost pale in comparison to the Clintons. But really, we'll get to the Clintons. There have been some interesting developments there that are nothing short of astounding. But politics allowed the Democrats to do nothing about it. They've done nothing about it. Which Democrat do you know insists on a thorough and complete investigation of Mrs. Clinton during her time at the White House, during her time in the Senate, during the time at as Secretary of State. They're not interested in this kind of stuff. They've now come to accept, including many Republicans, they've now come to accept that this is the world we're living in. Forget all those platitudes about country and this and that. It's money. Money is at the root of all of this. Money and power. And for many, it's the same thing. So we can't look to the Democrats. They gave us Hillary. So we can't look to the Democrats for political protection. She's one of them. Bernie Sanders is talking about reviving his movement and holding the Democrats accountable as he accepts a position of outreach, the outreach guy. So he's compromised right there. And he's still talking about a run in the next presidential cycle. Maybe he hasn't looked at his birth certificate lately to see how old he is now. It's very likely he may not make it as a credible candidate 4 years from now. And certainly with his branding, his newly acquired branding as a first-class traitor, I don't know where he expects to revive this movement. So the Democrats are out. Certainly the Republicans are out. Don't look to them for any help. And even the third parties are out. I haven't heard anything from the third parties since this election. What is it that they intend to do now? It isn't a surprise that they didn't make the cut. They saw that coming down the pike a long time ago. So it became a self-fulfilling prophecy. They did not make the cut. But is it enough to just stop there and then wait for the next cycle to crank things up? Or what is their plan B? What is their plan B? In the meantime, the vast majority of people who did vote, whether for the Republican Party or the Democratic Party or whoever, find themselves politically unprotected. Now, the Republicans, those who voted for Trump, are under some illusion that they're safe. They will find out it ain't necessarily so. But we see very little movement, especially from those political organizations and parties, that they intend to continue this fight. That the sense of being betrayed, the sense of loss among the people who supported them, is so deep that it would be smart, if for no other than a strategic reason, it would be smart to crank things up right now and encourage organization, encourage a pooling of resources for this fight. It is practically here. But it seems like after the election, they folded up their tents and they went away. When the exact opposite reaction should be what we would be witnessing right now if they had their act together. The people who would be happy for somebody to reach out to them and console them and say, okay, we lost, but here's why. And here's what we see coming at us. And now is the time, even if you didn't do it before, now is the time to get really exercised about your political identity and your sense of political obligation, because there's going to be a huge fight coming down the pike. It's practically here. And unless you just want, you know, this juggernaut to run right over you, you better get exercised about something that would help serve as some kind of a defense mechanism against what's coming. And that's what I am so upset about. After this election, they just kind of slunk away, vanished. And it proves that this is one of the internal failures of these movements and parties. They don't understand it. They don't get it about how important it is, especially in disappointing times, especially when people have taken a serious blow, to be ever present and to scramble. They shouldn't really be scrambling for a plan B, but okay, we'll forgive past trespasses. We're looking now about the immediate situation and the immediate future. The people are left alone. The people have only themselves to depend on. The people have no safe place to go. There's no defense for what's coming. They've been left to their own devices. And this is a major criticism I have. Major. The Democrats are going to be fighting. In fact, they've already begun the fight to save Hillary. Of all things, Jesse Jackson is trying to encourage Barack Obama to pardon the lady. When the focus should be the people in Chicago being killed still by cops, the people who still don't have adequate housing, the people whose schools are being shut down. And all of this being undertaken by the Obama administration, and it's going to get turned up several notches under Trump. The argument would be very evident. If you tolerated this level of oppression under your first black president, why should you hold me to a higher standard? Nobody took on Barack Obama. And while they weren't looking, Mr. Obama did practically everything by executive order. Guess what's the first thing that's going to go? Obama's legacy is largely written on paper via executive orders, not by legislation. Not with the consent of Congress. So there will be no problem just turning all of that aside and throwing it through the window. No problem there. None of these executive orders, the prolific number of executive orders issued by Barack Obama, under the guise that he was doing things. When I said early on, I said, this is not going to do well. You have an imperial president who thinks that he just needs to write a thing on a piece of paper and it is law. Well, you know, and you're a constitutional lawyer, allegedly. You know that stuff doesn't have any lasting power. When you go, your executive orders go. And all of the folks who are looking now for solace, they said, well, we at least have a little hedge because Barack Obama has written these executive orders. Are you in for a surprise? The first thing that will go, include, that's why they could tackle Obamacare, tear it apart. It has no legal structure to it in terms of the law. But it made good coverage, good media coverage, made him look good. There's Obamacare. And you see, in the end, with 2020 hindsight, essentially it was a plan. This was Hillary Clinton's plan, Bill Clinton's plan. Hillary Clinton was given cabinet-level status as the wife of the elected president. She thought she was president, too, at the time. Put a whole bunch of insurance people in a room in secret, hammered out something that they all approved, which means it can't possibly be good for the people. Nobody in Congress got to vote on this. But there's Obama. By executive order, we have Obamacare. Part of his legacy, he's thinking. First thing that's going to go out the window is Obamacare. And so many other initiatives that he allegedly takes credit for. And that's the point. Politics took precedence over the people, playing with people's heads, and playing into the hands of corporate America, looking for any way possible to make profits. They entered, they encountered a logjam, and that was purposeful in Congress. They blamed it on the Republicans wanting to do nothing. But the fact is, these things were flimsy and a bold attempt to circumvent the process so that the friends of the Clintons, who are also, some of them, the friends of the Obamas, since Obama is a creature of the Clintons and the Clinton machine, they would profit. It was important for them to profit and profit big during a particular timeline and certainly before he's leaving. But this is how politics works. You and I and other people who are looking for some kind of political protection never got it. Because our only job was to get him in office. The Democratic Party saw that as the sole priority to win the election, install their guy, and as the Clintons said about Haiti, you know, it's the gold rush is on. I keep repeating that you have to learn to ignore the change in personnel and pay attention to the permanence of a system. The system isn't changing much. Faces and names and whatnot would change a lot over the course of time. Systems remain almost impervious to change. And they're designed that way. There are people wondering, what will he do next? Well, what do you expect Trump to do next? You just study the system. He's a businessman. He comes from great wealth. Do you think he intends to leave office a pauper? Do you think he intends to give his money away? No. Now he has a great weapon. He has a weapon that no other oligarch could match. I've got a nuclear weapon, a nuclear system. I've got an army which I'm going to build up. I've got a whole military. I'm going to spend a lot of money on the military. Because this is what makes America great again. So where are we? Who are our protectors now? Where did they go? Why are they so silent and invisible? And telling us still, Trump is the problem. There's still all those black people especially who surrounded the Democratic Party and went to the polls and voted their butts off. And had all your pastors prostitute their churches, defile their sanctuaries with these candidates coming before them. Where are they now? Who is carrying out that work? Who is our Department of Defense? So we know what's happening and what will continue to happen, which is we'll have to fend for ourselves the best way we can. Forget about any system that will bring to us any measure of protection. It's not going to happen. They're all entrepreneurs, political entrepreneurs. And on their list of priorities, we are way, way down to the end. We get to be important every 4 years or every 2 years for members of Congress. But other than that, that's the reality that we're living with. So we better get busy. As I said, this is the year of reckoning for us. We can't play these games anymore. We've got to define our standards. We've got to support those things that are working or that could work. But we have to hold them accountable. You can't have an election, whether you won or lost, but especially if you lost and you gave it some kind of a try. We should be getting a report as to how things went and what you aim to do. But we get nothing but silence. Everybody has taken off. They've run to the high hills. And we're stuck. And looking down the barrel of what's coming. So we have to construct our own defense systems. And we have to be very vigilant about any system coming to us for support, saying that it understands our condition and it too is in the battle for freedom and justice and equality and whatnot. Yeah, well, you didn't stick around. You didn't stick around. So we have every right to be suspicious of you. We have every right to hold you with a healthy disregard. When the stuff is getting hot, you're looking for a nice air-conditioned place to set up your tent. And the rest of us are going to be left sweltering and fighting and dealing with the multitude of downsides that we are going to be experiencing. So, here's where we come back to. We come back to this question about how far along are we in seeing, analyzing the situation? and try to get a handle on what we have to do individually or collectively. But we cannot just sit like ducks waiting to get shot. They've already shown us by their actions that we would be crazy to expect miracles to happen here. We should talk about our role in creating our own misery, supporting a system that is antithetical to our needs and to our beliefs. We should be finding all kinds of ways, big and small, and how we can change the system, how we can devise one that will work. And I'm not talking here about some idealistic thing. I'm talking about practical things that we can do. And we shouldn't be waiting until they decide they need us again to go vote, so that we repeat the same cycle over and over again. You vote for a system that lets you down, that leaves you alone when defeat comes and doesn't have a plan B. I'll pause here for a minute and come back to your thoughts at 888-874-4888. Right after this.
Two for the dough, three for the stacks, D-Lambo. Many say the room and the roots are all evil. They wrote it in a text to forewarn the people. The money made them change. The paper and the fame, the nickels in your pocket like the letters in your name. It ain't the coin, but the meaning for the change.
You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM, and we're talking about a very sad situation that confronts us. But we shouldn't be, you know, overwhelmed by it either. We shouldn't be, you know, giving up. We shouldn't be so daunted by it that we just lay down. No, quite the opposite. What I'm in fact pleading for is that we get very exercised, but very focused about what we have to do. We draw the line, what we will not put up with under any circumstances. We're not going to put up with being treated in a particular way. And we are now going to take direct responsibility and control for our political protection. Jay from Queens, what have you to say?
Well, Patrice, good afternoon. I got to tell you, I can hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, you painted a pretty dark picture there. And some of which I do agree quite a bit with what you said, but I want to take a little different point or perspective in deconstructing what you said in your oration. One, as I said previously, and I'm sure just is my opinion, but that the momentum was already established by the visible protest of people in the streets, and that it was the time at this point to continue to move ahead. And I'm glad you reiterated that so much in your narrative earlier. But I also think that I want just to clarify something. The ACA was in fact a legislative passage. It was a little put into law, different from an executive order in that regard. And yes, given the recalcitrant or entrenched opposition to Barack Obama, he operated from executive order, and that pretty much is the way executives or a president can get around Congress. So we do have a system of government which we need to examine, deconstruct, and look at the pros and cons and the way in which the things sway, because we are, as you eloquently said, moving towards an imperial presidency when the executive, either rightly or wrongly, overexerts those powers to it without a check and balance. But in times, it can be looked as good and can be looked as bad. It can be used as a good force or bad force. And what I'm trying to get at is that in presenting our next steps. We need to, again, continue to educate and inform ourselves so we understand the system as it is and the components of it, because we have to be tactical and strategic about not just tearing it down or throwing it out, but knowing where its weak, where its Achilles heel is. What we have done and what Barack has done, in effect, and I don't mean just say him, he has the last president, let's call it what it is. He has put Trump in a position, or a Trump-like, a authoritarian-like. He's exercised areas even more so of the executive branch that would almost be, Trump will say, I got a right to do that because, you know, Brock did it, or, you know, Bush did it, and so forth. And we, the people, have kind of acquiesced depending on what our favors are. I still think that the strategic move is for, yes, to continue to deconstruct and look at and educate ourselves, but to reach across the lines because, yes, the American public, whether right or left, liberal or progressive, have been bamboozled. And it's going to be the people taking on their individual challenges with their own personal commitment and ultimately coming together, even if the visible protest is most important because it shows a common thread of contempt for what is going on. And it's going to have to move. And I think that once Trump bamboozled and has proven himself to that he can't deliver what he promised to his Republican or far right base, they will be open to, let's look at this. And we've got to let rational minds appeal prevail. And on the other hand, we do have some obstacles like this attempt to call what's fake news. You would be considered fake news at some point. Yes, the authoritarian hammer is about to come down so that the people can't even think or have discussion amongst themselves because you're propagating propaganda while the government's doing itself. We really are in an Orwellian situation. But I want to suggest hope. And though you painted a very dark picture, because if I didn't know what I know, and wasn't very clear about it, haven't studied, and also just know what I know, I would have. You would have to open a hotline for suicide. So please.
No, I don't think I was quite dismal about it. What I'm saying is that we've given the alternative ways of solving our problems way too much time. We've given it the benefit of doubt. We've given it the benefit of time. We lost. We constantly lose. I'm saying we have to be radical now and say, all right, this does not continue beyond this point.
I agree.
These things will not continue beyond this point, but what are those things?
Yeah, but we didn't lose because all our chips weren't on this duopoly. Those who know weren't. But we've been acquiescing as a people, regardless of your political ideology. We have seen a government that doesn't belong to the people. The Tea Party is right. I'm not saying they're right about what they think, but what they're saying in the bigger philosophical is the people who are here are entrepreneur politicians. They're like the emperors burning down Rome and the Colosseum is just sitting there, and all these guys are just sitting there. They're eating well. The people are starving, and this is the paradox we're faced with. We've got to get the people to see themselves not as worker, not as consumer, but as a citizen, and see that the collective interest first to have a government that really works for all of us, that the wheels are working, that what is the system? It has a House, it has a representative, it has all of the Congress, and then it has an executive branch. Are we moving to a totalitarian state? Definitely. Do you really want that? Even the alt-right, those militias up in the hills, they don't want that. You really want to have Trump tell you? Everybody's looking for the big daddy. That's why when Barack won, we all went to the side. Oh, our man's in the House. Feel good present. When Bush was in the House, oh, he's going to take care. Stop looking for big daddy. You are daddy. I'm sorry. Thank you.
but let me ask you, Jay.
Yeah.
I mean, you have very deftly avoided talking about the seminal question here, which is, to what degree are we, just for the sake of argument, I'll narrow it down, to what degree are progressives basically falling down on the job here and the political parties that represent them?
What political parties did you have before this election? No,
we had the Green Party before this election.
Well, no, we didn't have them because you're progressive. You weren't on board, so they didn't do the job, and they weren't nothing. And again, I said that we needed to – I didn't see them out on the street. They're not as present here in New York. But I don't want to over-criticize because I am a Green. If I want to be a Green, if I want to be a Republican, I can find that fast enough. If I want to be a Democrat, I can find that fast enough. So I am responsible for creating what I believe is a vehicle for me. I got to build it. So the point is that the Greens didn't fail. We just recognized they're there. I did what I would do strategically. I voted for them. But what my point is that now I've got to do more, and I've also got to do beyond just looking for a Green. I got to look for people who are like-minded, who see this system and its flaws in many ways and have something that they feel they need to fight for. Because many people can sit on the side.
The party has a responsibility to grow up.
The party.
It should be really pouring into communities and selling. Besides, I mean, we know it's a tough situation, and you're right; it sounds very dismal.
But in this
crisis moment, there is so much opportunity.
Right, but I don't want to calm down. If we're going to have this misleadership come back and do this all over again, then shame on us. This can't be a top-down process. I'm not wanting Jesse Jackson or any one of them, or even Sanders to come and tell me what we need to do. He's just symbolic. Those people are in the street. They have been in the street. The ones that's not my president, the ones who from Occupy Wall Street to Black Lives Matter, those are the people. And then on the other side, you got the people. Yeah, they're angry about something, but what are you really angry about? Can we talk, or are you going to shoot me first? I think we got something in common here. We need to have a little conversation.
No, what I'm saying is, when does this begin, and who starts
now?
Are these questions even important
you
at
are
this
doing
point?
Mm-hmm.
Are these questions important to you?
Are these questions important?
Yeah.
Yes, the questions are absolutely important. But we are so busy blaming. I mean, it's not just we. I mean, collectively, we're all having a post-traumatic stress syndrome. We're blaming, this one did this one. And then the parties are playing us. You know what I'm saying? The media is playing us. How dare you call it propaganda when you got all the alternative news or points of view? And when only listen to us, okay? So I'm suggesting that we have a responsibility to keep moving forward, to talking to each other, to having the meetings, whether it's BAI, whether it's PRN, the things that you do and the narratives that a lot of people bring to the table. People need to tune in where they can, and we need to keep moving forward, but keep doing what you're doing. You are a light out there. And when people can listen, they listen. Rather than go on to, 6 o'clock news and hear the same old stuff, somebody's telling them what the narrative is. So we have a big challenge before us. And we just got to keep awakening people and joining with people who think independently, but think openly with a critical mind. And that's really where not just the mind, but the heart and soul of people have to be one. That is what I'm going to say in essence, a love supreme. What is it that the only thing can overturn hate, the only thing that can enthusiastically motivate people is a desire to do something greater than themselves. And I think love is the most empowering thing possible. And that might sound silly, but for me, it works. And it is a way in which I can embrace or go forward in dealing with the obstacles, even hate mongers and people who threaten me. That I'm going to speak to you because there's something I see in you that I see in myself. Namaste. And I hope that you can embrace that and that we can find a way out of this thing, because neither one of us want this.
Well, I would love to say that I think the ideal thoughts that you just expressed would take hold. I would love that to happen. But I'm also looking at some of the realities that we are confronting. And I don't see much movement by the structures that presented themselves as the alternative to what we have been experiencing and what we most certainly will continue to experience. And I think that we ought to sound the alarm that all hands on deck. This is a major, major a turning point here. All hands on deck. It may not be the perfect solution, but we've got to indicate that we understand that we're in crisis.
And I think the people have power, and we should not underestimate nor tell them that they don't, because once the system can tell you don't have any power, you're scattered, you don't know, I'm going to come rescue you, then people feel that's where they're not realizing they're really in charge of this. They can turn it around or at least begin to realize, I'm not going to concede my power to you. I'm going to move forward with a collective interest that we can do this. Well, there's two of us in the room, because it's never all of us in the room, you know? I'm just not ready to surrender or have it be a top-down approach that they're going to tell us, and someone's going to come and say, oh, I'm your hero. That is what Trump has done in trumping America. That is what Barack Obama done. That's what Clinton thought they could do. That's a game they've been running on us. But somehow they're going to solve our problems when we have a structural problem as a species, as a government, as a nation. And it's a question we have to ask. Where are we going?
I don't disagree with anything that you've said. Even the observation about, you know, how daunting a picture I've painted, I don't disagree with that. But that is, in fact, how I see it. I see that we are being encouraged to ignore what is staring us starkly in the face and put some other kind of name to it. But in fact, we are in crisis. And in fact, we're beyond crisis. We're in meltdown.
Our structures
are failing us spectacularly. And we need some kind of inspired leadership to say, it's clear that the people want change because they're out in the street.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of people who are continuing that level of struggle. Our leadership is a problem. And
yes,
our
leadership.
Focus is a problem. And the reality, our clarity is really not working too well these days. You know, we need
clear.
To see
That's
things
amazing
more.
Thing.
More definitively and work on this fast. This is big. This is a huge turning point.
It is, but you're clear, and that's the beauty of it. You're not alone. You're not alone, and I thank you so much for what you do.
Well, we got to get it moving. My thing is we've got to get it moving. Even a shark drowns if it doesn't move. We've got to get moving. You know, we have to get moving, because my feeling is, and again, you will probably wag a finger and say you're going back into that dark corner again.
Mm-hmm.
But we are on the cusp of a definitive change that will be global. This is just a start. In many places, it has already begun, but it will be a global thing. If it can be accomplished with a certain degree of success and with ease in the United States, there'll be hell to pay all over the world.
Yes.
Because in many ways, people look to the United States to see what is the nature of struggle and to see the commonality that they have and to look at how people express their disagreement or disapproval with government. So we're not living in an isolated world. And this is, we are on the cusp of a global phenomenon. We've already seen it express itself so many places. Mm-hmm. And with 100% effect. And that's not a good thing, because it involves fascism. It involves direct oppression of the people. It involves the abrogation of rights. It involves really horrible downsides to democracy. And if we don't resist, then all is lost. We are all lost all over the world. Battles for justice and freedom will be lost. We owe it, not just to ourselves, but we owe it to the world, it seems to me, to take a stand.
I agree with you, Therese. I think that it's a massive challenge before us. They're so, I mean, world-threatening, species-ending type of events that could occur if we're not persuaded that there's something better for us as a as people. And I do believe, but therein lies my sense of hope, even in the face of despair, is not just is that idea that there's something bigger than this. And if we don't grab a hold of it, we'll only be fighting as the ship keeps sinking. And somehow I've got to get your ear. And I want to know, I want you to know, I care about you as much as I care about me. And somehow if we can see that, then maybe we can live to fight another day or disagree another day. But we got some work to do, some real heavy lifting to do, as you describe. I think that's appropriate. It's very dire. And for America, the empire that it is, in many ways, but also the idea that it is not because they say the cliche of the beacon of light, but yes, people look to say, what will this so-called nation do now? The one that claims democracy and the possibility of brighter opportunities, what will they do? And so we have a task upon us, but I think the system is the important part, to deconstruct the system and know how it works, tweak it, and move on, but not be guided by the misleaderships and the things that they put in place to get people to feel they're less empowered, that they don't have power, and that, yes, the visibility of protests as well as the collective, I'm in the room with you, we're going to sit and hear this lecture, we're going to figure out what the next strategic move, because I really don't know how the law works. I don't know how a bill gets passed. Well, I don't know how to put pressure on my local councilman. I don't know who the doggone judge is. How do judges get elected? Well, they don't get elected, most of them, at the local level. They get appointed because the party brings them along. I told you I didn't vote for none of them. I wrote myself in. So we have to ask the question, maybe that's what we need. We need clarity and transparency in the political system when it comes to voting for judges, albeit that we know the federalists
and we need
taken
a
over
fire
that.
Under our butts. That's what we need. We need
to get exercised about the situation we're in.
And this is why you were born, Jay, to bring us this information. This is why you're on the planet. I thank you so much for calling in and sharing your thoughts today.
Well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That brings to an end the program for today. Coming up next, Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele. You can reach me at leadstories, LEID stories, @gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your esteemed company. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye. Money's to blame, but it's only paper. Self put the blame on everything. Money's to blame, but it's only paper. Self put the blame on everything. Money's to blame, but it's only paper. Self put the blame on everything. But it's only paper on everything. But it's only.